Armand Katayan has joined us on Sports Byline USA. I want you to check out this book. It's called The System, The Glory and Scandal of Big-Time College Football. And Armand, first let me go down some facts and some truths here. First of all, facts. Millions fill 100,000-seat stadiums and tens of millions watch on TV. Billions of dollars from TV deals, sponsorships, and producer licenses flow into the university coffers. The average top 10 team budget is $80 million, and top coaches more than $3 million a year, and some even make more than $5 million. But the truths are, athlete students work essentially full-time jobs with no share in the millions of dollars the schools make. Players don't graduate and end their college careers with broken bodies. Janitors who clean up player misconduct. Football hostesses willing to do whatever it takes to land a top recruit. And seven-figure black box recruiting slush funds. And 90% of the major athletic departments still lose money. And the ever-escalating arms race is at the expense of academic scholarships, facilities, faculty, and affordable tuition fees. The thing that I find interesting is if any of these things about the truce existed in a normal business, they'd either be investigated by the government, and we'd see
president... What a good point. Yeah. That was like, I'm like nodding my head, Ron, as you're talking, and you know, that essay. I mean, absolutely. Yeah, most people, like Dave Brandon, for example, the AD at Michigan, said, first of all, we have the worst business model in the history of business. You know, you pour millions of dollars into something where only 20% of the actual big-time programs, the top 120 BCS teams, either break even or make money. So why are we doing this? The answer is because everybody's chasing those dollars that come from the big, now more so than ever, now the big national football playoff, the college football playoff. So, yeah, you have all this kind of stuff going on behind the curtain, you know, which Jeff and I always saw the system as sort of this machine that had all these different component parts to it. And in the end, you'd be like, well, what goes into like creating the spectacle that we see on Saturday? And that's what I think our book does that no other book has done in a long time, is it explains it to you in a way, not just through Armand and Jeff's eyes, but more importantly, through the eyes of the people that actually are in the system, that have lived in the system and have been either, you know, profiting from it or chewed up by it. And you mentioned hostesses. We talked to one of the premier college football hostesses in the country who had never talked before, Lacey Pearl Earps, who was known as the closer at Tennessee. And her story is amazing. We look at the relationships between tutors and athletes through the eyes of a young woman at Missouri who got caught up in it with a star running back who sexually assaulted her in her bedroom at Missouri when she was there as a tutor. And, you know, what happens to boosters like a guy like Bobby DiGeronimo, who was a loyal supporter of the Ohio State program for decades and had seven of his eight kids go to Ohio State and had been lauded for his support of the program. But when Ohio State gets caught up in the Tattoogate scandal, Gene Smith, the athletic director, throws Bobby DiGeronimo under the bus and disassociates him from the program for 10 years in order to, you know, mitigate the pending NCAA sanctions. And so you really get a feel for, you know, how the system can raise you up to unbelievable heights, but at the same time can crush you for the good of the betterment of the brand. And that's where I think this book has really struck a chord with people.
Is it fair to say that the hostess programs where they exist, and they exist a lot of places at universities across this country, is it really is pimping?
Well, I think it is I think it's a form of whether you want to call it, now I'm not saying that Lacey Pearl Earps was doing this, but yeah, it's a form of prostitution. I think it's a form of the universities pimping out these girls that are willing for their own betterment within the athletic department to sleep with 17 or 18-year-old high school boys in order to get them to commit to the program. Now, whether that's the rule or the exception, that's hard to say, but it's certainly a part and parcel of the system.
How large is the hostessing programs? I mean, how many universities, was I correct in saying it happens on a grand scale across?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the SEC, that's like the secret weapon in the SEC. Because all things being equal, if you're matching up facilities and coaches and, you know, booster networks and everything else, the relationship that a recruit has with the first girl and face that he sees on campus when he comes in there, it's a difference maker. And these girls are extremely sophisticated. Let's not forget, it's a 17 or 18-year-old high school boy, no matter how much of a star he is, starry-eyed over the idea of dating or the potential of dating and sleeping with a college girl who's 21 or 22 years old. That's a powerful lure. And the girls are very, the best ones are very sophisticated in the intimation that if you come here, the possibility exists of a relationship with me. Some of them at Tennessee, Charlotte Henry, who I spoke with, was disgusted by the whole idea of what it takes, what the commitment level was at a school like Tennessee in order to get a so-called official visit by a recruit. Lacey Pearl Earps, who is really the centerpiece of the chapter, who brought Bryce Brown, who was the number one recruit in the country, Lane Kiffin's first year, and she was able to get him to commit and earn the nickname the closer because of it, said she did not sleep with Bryce, I believe it, but she tells this really harrowing story of all the work that she had done, but when the NCAA began to investigate and it became public as part of a scandal at Tennessee, she was absolutely abandoned by the program, and it's heartbreaking in a way to see a young woman who had given so much to the program because she believed in it and wanted to be the best at what she was doing, an integral part of the system, eventually just gets tossed aside by Lane Kiffin because it's not in his best interest anymore as he's headed to USC.
We only have a couple minutes before we have to break again, but let's talk about another thing you talk about, janitors. Can you explain to everybody what they are and how they clean up player misconduct?
Well, one of the most interesting things for me, I thought I understood college football pretty well, and I realized fairly early on I didn't. A janitor, in the big picture, they're called the directors of football operations, and they are really the conductors of the program. They are responsible for making the trains run on time, whether it's the planes and the trains and the buses all meeting the team at the right time, having the right juices on the table, the buffet being perfect, the hotel, the meeting rooms. They are the political operatives of the advancement of these college football programs. But the janitor comes from a statement that Cleve Bryant, who was considered to be a legend in his workings at the University of Texas for 13 years under Mack Brown, before an unfortunate set of circumstances resulted in his dismissal, he described himself in an interview that Jeff and I did with him in October of literally 2011. It was one of the first interviews we did as we were preparing the proposal for the book. We said to him, so how do you describe yourself? Are you like the right-hand man to Mack Brown? Are you the buffer? Are you the bad guy, the good guy? Who are you? And he kind of put his hands up in the air and said, man, I'm the janitor. He goes, I fix stuff. And he didn't say stuff. And so that was a really eye-opening experience for us, that you do have these guys who are the first phone call when an arrest is made. Cleve's phone and his television was on 24 hours a day. When he would be at sleep at night in his home, the television was on. So when the phone rang, the number, all he had to do was raise his head and look at his TV, and the number would come up, and he immediately would know, you know, whether it was Austin PD or whether it was the campus police department or whether it was an athlete calling in trouble. So that's the role of these guys, and they truly are the guys that are the, they either sweep it up or they clean it up.
Armin, hold on just a second. We got to take another break. Armin Katayan is with us. Again, he has co-authored this book, The System, The Glory and Scandal, Big-Time College Football. Of course, Armin, a lead correspondent for 60 Minute Sports and has won 11 Emmys over his fine career. And I'll just share with people as we go into the break revelations that you'll find in this book by the authors. Nearly 200 college football players were arrested in the year 2012. The pressure to win is greater than ever. Between 2009 and 2012, 72 head football coaches were fired. At least 66 head football coaches earn over $1 million per year. We continue across the country and around the world with you on Sports Byline.